Welcome to the Eye on Football podcast for CBSSports.com. Will Brinson here along with Ryan Wilson. We are brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio for a free trial and 10% off. Go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use offer code FUN, as in fun, as in Johnny Manziel's pro day, as in everything else involving the NFL in March, right, Ryan Wilson?
Why did Johnny Manziel, I mean, the camo shorts I get, but why is he wearing a full football getup, like shoulder pads and a helmet, while everyone else is running around in shorts and T-shirt? And never in the history of a pro day have we seen anyone pretend it's like a real game in terms of their getup.
Well, I mean, my assumption was that it makes it more realistic. I mean, I don't know if it does. I mean, it's certainly harder to throw with a helmet on, right?
I guess. I mean, I'm fine with it. It just seemed like a little overeager, like the kid who gets ready for the birthday party 3 days in advance. He's got, like, his best clothes on, and he's ready to go. Like, settle down. George Whitfield will still wave the broom at you with or without a helmet, and you can impress, like a normal person would, unless you're Teddy Bridgewater again.
Did you watch the pro day?
Yeah, I watched part of it until my two-year-old started yelling at me, but I saw enough to, you know, he looked good. But, again, I don't know what that means in terms of where he's drafted and how he'll be as an NFL player. I liked him before, so I like him now. I'm fine with him wearing a helmet. I was just sort of making fun of him, but I don't know if this changes anything, does it?
I mean, it shouldn't. I will say the one thing, and this is what people are going to knock Jaws for, it because Jaws is now holds Manziel in a higher esteem than he did like 24 hours ago. And first of all, that's stupid. A pro day shouldn't change the way you perceive a quarterback. But I do think you look at and I saw him mention this, and they're zooming in on the footwork that Manziel exhibited during his pro day, and, you know, kind of making sure his feet were right when he was throwing. He wasn't, you know, he was pushing off his back foot to drive the ball. He seemed to have really done a lot in a short amount of time coaching with George Whitfield, and they did a smart job scripting the plays. He showed off a strong arm. I mean, I think he's got there's a better deep ball than Blake Bortles. Definitely got a stronger arm than Teddy Bridgewater. The size is an issue. They rolled him out a bunch, but I mean, I don't. It shouldn't change it. If you thought he was a top 10 pick before, you certainly feel better about that now. If you had him fall to the bottom of the first round, I'm not sure that like all of a sudden you're moving back up to the top 10 though.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So where does it go?
I think he's a top 10 pick.
Where does it go?
Well, it depends. All right, so here's I have an issue with the Browns. Ba-bum.
Good line.
Bum-ba-bum. I mean, that's our weekly Browns mention. No, but the Browns didn't go to Blake Bortles' pro day. They didn't go to Manziel's pro day. They made a point. It got leaked out that they didn't interview Manziel. It seems like they're just kind of, like, they're almost trying too hard.
Way too hard.
Way too hard to act like they're not interested in Manziel. I mean, you know.
It's like ignoring the hottest girl in school.
Exactly.
Point is, she doesn't even know who you are, and then she ends up hooking up with somebody else.
Right. But, I mean, it's like, it'd be fine, but if you're, like, the captain of the chess club, you can't ignore the hottest girl in school and think that's going to work. She doesn't know. She's not even on her radar, bro.
It's like, what's the movie with Ronald Miller, Lawn Boy?
Yes.
Can't Buy Me Love.
Can't Buy KS. That's right.
That's right. Now, the Browns have the $1,000 from cutting all the grass, but they're ignoring, God, what's that girl's name? Cindy Mancini. God, I can't believe I remember that.
That's impressive.
They didn't approach Cindy Mancini and say, "Hey, listen, I need you to hook me up and pretend to like me." They're ignoring Cindy Mancini, and Cindy Mancini's going to end up hooking up with one of the goofballs on the football team.
That's right. Now, I do think the Browns have an interesting setup because they have 4-26. We talked about this before. I think that
they had that 2 years ago. How'd that work out?
It's true. A different regime. I actually think Ray Farmer's going to be all right. Don't ask me why.
He's not even going to pro days. He's already taking vacations.
That's a smart man. He already knows how he feels about these guys. But so you could have watched it on TV.
yeah. Maybe wore a helmet while he's watching.
He's running around his house in a Browns helmet. So when I look at the – but I look at – you look at the draft order. You have the Texans at 1, who are quarterback needy, obviously. The Jaguars at 3 need a quarterback. I think we rule out the Rams, although they could have an auction there if Manziel is – you know, people are that hot for him and are worried Jacksonville will take him. The Raiders at – the Browns at 4 need a quarterback. The Raiders at 5 need a quarterback. And then the Vikings at 8. And you could also make a case that the Titans at 11 could use a quarterback. But I think that it's at 1, 3, 4, 5, 8. Manziel will go to one of those teams. Somebody there is going to be intrigued enough by Manziel, and either Bridgewater or Bortles will be off the board. The Raiders' interest in Derek Carr is mind-boggling. Not mind-boggling. It's just – it's hard to believe they would take him at five.
Not just interest. They're in love with him.
That's right. But and that's the other thing, too. It's just like Manziel, like the Browns are trying too hard. I mean, it's late March. If there's so much smoke about a team loving a guy like that, it means it's not true.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, in fact, the Derek Carr story for the Browns came out. There was one in late February during the combine whenever they didn't, quote unquote, like Johnny Manziel. And in fact, our buddy Daniel Jeremiah went on the radio and said this, that he was hearing that they didn't like Manziel, but they loved Derek Carr at 26.
Right.
Which sounds a whole lot like what we saw in 2012, where they traded up for Trent Richardson and then took
Brandon Whedon.
Old man Whedon with the 22nd pick, I think.
No, that's right. It's I wouldn't be opposed if they went. Now, look, I mean, if I had a pick, if I had a top five pick or a top 10 pick in this draft, I would get a skill position player. I would, and I think that you could, pretty safe to say that with the top 10 pick, that you could score one of Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, Jadeveon Clowney, or Khalil Mack.
I see that you have the Texans taking Bortles in your most recent mock draft. Everyone, in fact, all the CBSSports.com quote-unquote experts have Bortles going first. I think it's going to be Clowney. I have a hunch.
Really? I would take Clowney one if it were me.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what the Texans should do, but it just seems like I can't shake the idea that Bill O'Brien took that job because he took it on New Year's Eve. He knew what pick they had. They had the number one overall pick.
You saying he was drunk?
He might have been. But
needed to be.
No, it's not that bad a job. I think people say the roster's overrated, but it's a decent roster. But I think when I look at why he would take that job, he sees the number one overall pick and knows that without question he can get the quarterback he wants if that quarterback is there. He knew it.
He's not there though.
But he knew the quarterbacks that would be available. He played against Blake Bortles last year. I just can't shake the idea that he took that thinking, I can get my quarterback. I can get my guy.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I mean, he's seen Bortles play, but nobody thought Bortles was more than a third-round pick until about November.
That's right.
But so they take Jadeveon Clowney, who they know they have. They let him play outside linebacker in that 3-4 opposite J.J. Watt. On sub-packages, he plays wherever you want him to play for Romeo Crennel. And then you use Ryan Fitzpatrick in the same way that the Chiefs use what's his name, Alex Smith, as a bridge quarterback. You let him play for a year or two, or even start Case Keenum. And you can get by. You're not going to win any playoff games or make a deep playoff run with either of those guys. You can get by, and then you get your guy without having to press for it. So next year, you know, they have the 10th or 11th or 15th pick or whatever. Maybe your guy lands there. But I don't think just because you need a quarterback, you take one, even if you're not 100% sold on him. I don't think they're 100% sold on him.
On Bortles, I don't think they are either. I think Bill O'Brien projects enough in Bortles that he thinks he can develop into an all-pro passer, and that he's going to give it that shot. I mean,
you know what else you should be worried about?
What's that?
John McClain, the beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, who said
he said they're going quarterback.
A month ago, he said there's no way they take Clowney because he doesn't fit what Romeo Crennel does, which is sort of a crazy thing to say. McClain is pretty well connected. His latest mock draft has him taking Clowney.
He did. What? It does? That was like part of why I felt good about my quarterback hunches, because he'd been so.
Yeah, he's changed his tune.
After the owners' meetings, that's interesting. And look, that dude's well connected with the Texans.
Absolutely.
I mean, if he hasn't taken Clowney, I might. I'm doing a mock draft today. I might go Clowney at one.
I don't think that's outrageous. I like
it. No, I don't think it is either. I mean, he's the best player. And if the Texans took him, I mean, if you're the Texans, and look, I'm arguing against myself here, but if you take Bortles and Clowney turns out to be a monster for the Rams, a lot of people are getting fired.
Look, in 06, they took Mario Williams instead of Reggie Bush and Vince Young, and that was the right move. Mm-hmm. No one was particularly crazy about it at the time, but it was the exact right thing to do. And if they have the same kind of conversations now with a different regime, because that was Charlie Cashley making that call, then you do it. You live with it. And Blake Bortles isn't going to be he ain't going to be great next year wherever he ends up. I'll go out on a limb and say that.
No, I mean, well, no, I don't think so either. That's not a big limb. That's a walking out on a thick tree there, buddy.
Exactly. All right, what else we got?
We go to the NFL side of things. The owners' meetings, as I mentioned, were this past
weekend. You were there for 3 days doing nothing. How'd it go?
I was there working hard, buddy. Executive producer. That's what I was. I was producing Prisco and Lockenfora. And since he doesn't listen to the podcast, I don't think we did not have Matt Brodsky.
Why not? He couldn't make the road trip. I mean, he flies across the country, but he can't drive.
Yeah, I don't get it. We had Tad. We had this guy named Tad. And kudos to Tad. Tad is the anti-Brodsky.
Tad sounds like he's from NC State, too.
No, Tad flew in from Chicago, and Tad's a quiet, hardworking guy who didn't go out at night. And
does he know any Australian girls?
No, doesn't know any Australian girls. Not to my knowledge. He maybe had them in his hotel room. I hope Mrs. Tad's not listening, because that's not the case. He went back to his room to FaceTime with his wife and kids at night, and he's anti-Brodsky. And he's like, hey, man, what do you want me to do? Like, hey, like Tad, like you could be like, Tad, go film that tree for 4 hours. He's like, sure, man, whatever you need.
So what was your big takeaway from the owners' meetings in lovely Orlando, Florida?
It was, you know, that there wasn't a, well, first of all, I guess the number one thing is that playoff expansion is coming.
Ugh.
But I don't think that's shocking. Everybody knew that, right?
Here's the thing, and it sounds like Roger Goodell's beating the same drum from the same talking points that he was using on the 18-game schedule, that fans want it and all this other crap. I don't think fans do want it. I don't want it, and it's primarily because I'm not crazy about change. I sort of like things the way they are, and that isn't necessarily a good or bad thing, but that's just where I stand on the issue. But for Goodell just to say that people want it, that's just horse crap.
Yeah, I mean, his argument was there's a tremendous amount of interest. I do think, and Prisker and I were talking about this, and we both agree on it. One of the things that would be good about it is that it would put more value on the number one seed. So, like, if you
put less value on winning football games.
No, not at all.
Well, when you have 8-8 teams and 7-9 teams getting to the playoffs, well, that devalues wins.
The Cardinals had won 10 games and they didn't get in the playoffs. And then the Packers were 8-7-1 and they did get in the playoffs. So, I mean, the system already does that.
So half the teams should go to the playoffs every year?
No, well, I think you can go to 7 teams in the playoffs, and the only bye is for the number one team in each conference.
I don't like it.
You just don't like change.
Yeah, I just told you that.
I know, but I mean, I think
that's why I still have an afro and lamb chops.
That would actually be pretty fantastic. I have no problem with the playoff change. What was interesting, though, is Roger Goodell said he wouldn't rule out the change coming, the expansion coming in 2014.
You better hurry up.
By the way, your Steelers would have gotten in last year with
the
expansion.
And the year before, but I mean, I'm okay with that. 8-8 teams don't deserve to go to the playoffs.
8-7-1 teams, though, too?
Yeah.
The other thing too is everybody would get a bye,
only one team gets a bye in the new system, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Everybody who won their division would get home field advantage for at least one game.
And actually, Peter King mentioned this, and this is something else that sort of I could do without. There would be six wild card games now, and then one might end up on a Monday night in the first week, which is fine for ratings. But I mean, do we really need Do the playoff games need any more ratings? Are we at a point where we're like, you know what, not enough people are watching this?
No, that's Mark Cuban's argument.
Oh, I don't read anything he says.
Do you hear about that? I mean, this is like the big story.
I heard him yelling and screaming about the NFL's going to be dead in 10 years, but...
Well, his argument was that the NFL would become, quote, oversaturated. And then he said, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard all that, too. I think he sort of overblows the argument, but I think there's some merit to what he's saying. You can't have a football game every night of the week. And I know that's an exaggeration, but we're talking about Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, potentially in the not-too-distant future. Not Friday, because I think...
But Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then all of a sudden... And that's the thing. I mean, look, I've
been... Thursday night football is awful, by the way.
Hey.
I don't think you would disagree with that. In general, of the 16 games, or however many weeks it was, 15 weeks, it was, what, 4 games maybe? And I'm not even exaggerating on that end.
I'm a company man. I would never disagree with that. I would never agree with that. CBS owns a Thursday night. I think Thursday night games would be better.
Didn't.
I think they'll be better going forward on CBS.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I do.
Let me know when your balls drop.
No, I agree that they've been bad. I think they'll be better because they have to give better games next year.
What do you mean they have to? Why?
Because CBS is paying billions of dollars for it.
Oh, I see. They were giving them away to NFL Network, so it was more of kind of a petri dish sort of situation.
It's not even you were giving them away.
I don't know. I just don't.
You were taking them.
I actually sort of liked it how it was where Thursday night picked up in the second half of the season. I was fine with that.
Yeah.
I think I'm not sure what the ratings were either for Thursday night. I can't imagine they were great.
For Thursday night games? They were great.
They were?
Yeah, they were huge. I mean, not like huge, but I mean, it was what people were watching.
So it's probably Monday night, Sunday, and then Thursday in terms of how the ratings went, and they were all good.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yes, I think Sunday night sometimes would top Monday night.
Yeah, yeah. Either those national games,
right?
I don't know if Thursday night would beat like the big national show, games on 4 p.m. Sunday. Maybe they do, but I would imagine
no. Those Sunday 4 p.m. games are huge.
Yeah, because I mean, not everyone has NFL Network, and a lot of those games are garbage.
Yeah, and yeah, that's the thing is people wouldn't always tune in. But I think as long as they don't try to force anything, you know, like you certainly don't need Tuesday. You can't have
Saturday. That would be awesome.
Saturday. I mean, people are going to watch the NFL games, even the crappy Thursday night games. People are going to watch, and if you miss the Thursday night game, it's no big. Like it's not a huge deal for people out there. Fantasy football is going to keep driving interest in those games. I just don't see them disappearing. I think Mark Cuban's full of it. If anything, the thing that's going to hurt football is player safety. Changes like that will hurt football, but it's not oversaturation.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, people love it. I think part of the issue, and this is sort of the kind of inside Beltway mentality, people who cover this thing all the time, people who have real jobs aren't focused on football as much as we think they are.
Right.
So that's also the other issue. So I'm sure Goodell's a smart guy, even if I disagree with a lot of what he says. He's not a dummy. You don't get paid $40 million a year unless you're doing something right.
That's right.
Also, one other thing that I would propose at the next owners' meeting. First 16 days of the season,
mm-hmm.
Have the Browns play their schedule out. Then they're done. They're done in the middle of September.
Just wrap it up. Let Johnny Manziel get jammed a couple times. All right, let's go through these rules and proposals that were passed or not passed because they are worth discussing, right?
Yeah.
Goalpost extended 5 feet higher in the air.
The funniest thing about this, I listened to the Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla podcast, and Carolla has been railing about raising the goalpost for years now. And it seems like every time you bring something up, whether it's football related or otherwise, it tends to happen at some point in the near future, and he was exactly right about this. I remember him yelling about this back during last season. He'd go, why wouldn't you do it? Of all the things that the NFL is able to accomplish technologically, why wouldn't you just raise the goalpost? So I think it makes a lot of sense, and I have no issue with it. I can't imagine what the holdup was, but finally some resolution there.
Yeah, Bill Belichick proposed that rule, and it was – you remember 2012 – Justin Tucker made a kick to have the Ravens beat the Patriots 31-30 on Sunday night. Belichick goes ape smell, goes after a ref because the kick was like directly over the crossbar, but you couldn't tell if it was in or not. And they did a bunch of studies in terms of like how high they could raise them and what was an acceptably like decent height and then where the kicks were, and it makes a ton of sense. I mean, it's hard to tell when the football goes over the thing and it's right over the crossbar whether a kick was good or not.
Yeah, no, that's right. And if you're not going to do that, then move the kicks back. But we didn't get that going. So what else we got?
Recovery of a loose ball in the field of play is now a reviewable play.
I mean, another rule that was a long time coming. I don't know what the holdup was.
Known as the Navarro Bowman rule because of his recovery. You wrote about this, when he tore his ACL at the play, too.
Yeah, I think what happened, the Seahawks threw an interception a couple plays later or something, so it didn't really matter, but that's not the point.
Right. I mean, like, the problem was everybody knew what happened, and they couldn't review it because it's not a reviewable play. So stupid. One that was turned down, and Jeff Fisher said, quote, less than 50%, end quote, of the coaches were in favor of increasing the number of plays that could be reviewed. Bill Belichick put a proposal out to make all plays reviewable. And then somebody else put a proposal out to make, I think the Redskins, to make personal fouls reviewable. I like both ideas, but they were shot down by the coaches.
I want to know which coaches are voting against these rules.
Fit more than half of them.
Oh, I don't understand it. Also, who the hell votes down not doing away with overtime in the preseason?
Yeah, that was tabled. Doesn't make any sense. I mean, that rule has to happen. I mean, overtime in the preseason is totally worthless.
Isn't Roger Goodell the guy who keeps saying that everyone hates the preseason?
Yeah. Why? What's the holdup? Who just, yeah. I guarantee you in the middle of April, they're meeting April 8th or early. That's actually in like a week. They will, that's one that's less covered by the media. That they will do away with the preseason games at that owners' meetings.
The overtime in the preseason games.
Yeah, that's what I mean. During replay review now, this is one that was passed on Tuesday at the owners' meetings, the referee, via audio, I assume, like Dean Blandino will be in the ref's ear, can consult with officials with the officiating department in New York, who will be reviewing the play. And, you know, as soon as the play happens, they'll start reviewing it. They'll be watching. They had this big command center.
Yeah,
I've been in there, and it's just a room with a bunch of TVs and a bunch of TVs, and and they just hang out and watch football, and then they go through every play, and then they obviously go back through and look at them later. But at while it's live, what they'll do is if there's a situation where there's a replay could come into effect, they'll start reviewing it before the referee does. So they'll have an idea, if it's a really questionable issue, what to tell him, how to give him advice. Conspiracy theorists are worried that this means the New York office will be, hammering them with, you better rule this way for the Patriots or better rule this way for the Steelers.
This is a fantastic idea. Hockey does it. It works fine. And people are always complaining that the refs don't know what they're doing anyway. So it seems like another pair of eyes makes a lot of sense.
I agree, and it's the ref at the field will have the quote ultimate authority.
Yeah, right. That I disagree with, but the other part I'm fine with.
I mean, they'll gently nudge him in one direction.
Fine. Generally, I think they probably would know more, having a kind of a longer view of the thing.
I'll be interested to see whether or not they provide like that audio of Blandino talking is made public at all.
Oh, God, they don't need to do that.
No, they don't, but I mean, when you're watching the game, will you get to hear what he's telling the ref?
You shouldn't, but again, the Steelers shouldn't be forced to do Hard Knocks, but they probably will be. What are you going to do?
That's right. Another rule, outside of 2 minutes, the game clock will now continue following a quarterback sack. That makes all the sense in the world, just to speed the games up.
Yep.
Roll-up block protection was increased to include the sides. Nobody really knows what that means, but it includes the sides. No, I'm just kidding. Instead of busting up the back of your leg when somebody, it now includes the side, too. And they're just protecting people.
Yeah, but that doesn't include cut blocking. I mean, no. Also, remember last year when everyone was up in arms about the crown of the helmet rule, and we didn't hear a peep about that?
There were like five times it was an issue, yeah.
It was? I don't remember being called once. It was called? No.
Actually, yeah, maybe it wasn't called. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't a big deal at all.
Yeah, so, sometimes you just got to take a deep breath.
The biggest deal over the week, maybe, was that dunking on goalpost is now illegal.
I was actually fine with that rule, too. I sort of joked on the radio somewhere that this is basically an act by Goodell to discriminate against fat guys, because who doesn't love fat guys dunking?
Right.
But, there were some – I think Jeff Fisher, the co-chair of the competition committee, said that, well, one time we had to wait 20 minutes to fix the goalpost after Jimmy Graham dunked. And that's a lame excuse. I'm fine. I don't care about not dunking, really. But fans are upset about that, too.
The funny part is it wasn't Jeff Fisher. It was Rich McKay, who's also on the competition committee. But Rich McKay is the CEO and president of the Atlanta Falcons, who play in the Georgia Dome, which is where Jimmy Graham broke the goalpost.
Oh, Jimmy Graham. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Fisher said it later on a radio interview.
Oh, okay.
So I guess McKay told him to keep talking about it.
Well, I think what the deal is, A, you don't want to have somebody dunk and it breaks the goalpost. You got to wait 30 minutes for them to fix it. Because that happened last year. B, if you're going to raise these goalposts 5 feet, they're going to be a little bit less stable. And if somebody dunks on a goalpost and it falls over and, falls into the crowd.
No, please.
I mean, it could happen.
Get breakaway goalposts.
Well, then,
that's a joke. Like breakaway rims. Remember that the big deal when everyone was breaking the rims, so they got breakaway rims.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
30 years ago.
Yeah, I do remember that. Darvin Ham doing that goalpost dunk.
Darvin Ham. It goes back to Moses
Shaq.
Malone.
Yeah,
Moses Malone. Daryl Dawkins.
Yep.
Chocolate Thunder.
Chocolate Thunder, man.
Jerome Lane did it for Pitt. But you may not. You're probably still wearing diapers back when that happened.
I was. I'm still wearing diapers now.
I was going to say you're like 15, but whatever.
I think that, so. Actually, the deal with the goalpost too is that it was always illegal when they passed the prop rule. But they grandfathered in dunking, and I think that they decided Tony Gonzalez retired this year, and they said, all right, we're going to out. That was his thing. He was really the only one doing it, and then Jimmy Graham kind of started doing it, And then, Donald Penn's doing it. Fat guys are doing it. So I think
I actually found a photograph of Drew Brees doing it. I don't know if he actually dunked it, but he ain't 6 feet. He might say he's 6'1" or whatever on his little football card, but I think he's like 5'11" and change.
Right.
So that also takes – I mean, that's pretty impressive that he can dunk. And by the way, speaking of dunking, did you see the Johnny Manziel Instagram dunks?
No.
Oh, you didn't? He put them on Instagram – 2 or 3 days ago, and they're his Instagram account, and immediately there were three different dunks. One was a 360, 2 feet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't watched them yet.
Immediately, people were like, "That clearly that goal's 8 feet tall." But he's listed at 5'11 and three quarters. He has a 34-inch vertical, and he has huge hands. So I think they're legit, and they're pretty impressive dunks for a little dude.
I bet he can dunk. I mean, he's athletic as hell.
If Drew Brees can dunk, he can definitely dunk.
Absolutely. Rules that were tabled, cameras on the goal line, sidelines, and inlines wasn't decided yet. The NFL wants to talk with broadcast partners, a.k.a. figure out who's going to pay for them. Bill Belichick said, and this is one of the best lines of his press conference, he goes, what should we do about paying for them? He goes, I don't know. Maybe we could have a bake sale or do a car wash. I don't know, man.
Sell cupcakes, yeah. Here's the thing. The commissioner makes $40 million a year. It's a billion-dollar corporation. We can't pay for a couple cameras.
Yeah, I think they want – and also the other thing, too, is if you're going to do that, you need to – the cameras can't be based on – like you can't go – you can't have different cameras depending on what CBS has or NBC, you know?
Yeah, they have to be, standardized cameras. You can't have a VHS video recorder from back in the day on the
– Well, I mean, just as an example, like – NBC is going to have really nice cameras for the one game a week they broadcast on Sunday night. They're going to bring stupendous goal line, sideline, end zone cameras for those. Now, I'm not saying CBS is not going to bring great cameras, but if CBS had the choice between buying a nice camera for Browns Jaguars or buying a crappy camera,
Browns Jaguars, that's right.
I mean, what's he going to do, right?
Well, look, remember back in, I think it was 07, maybe even 08. Not all the CBS games were in HD, and people were yelling and screaming about that
right
on Sundays. And finally, they went all HD, either in 08 or 09. Must have been 08. But that was a big deal because that's a huge cost up front to buy these HD cameras.
Yeah.
So, I guess we're having the same conversation.
Yeah, but, I mean, the NFL should just buy them and give them to every yes. team. And then you show up. But I guess then the broadcast people are bothered if they show up with the cameras. There's a lot of bureaucracy here. They can figure it out. There's a way to do it, but it needs to get done.
All right, what else?
Jim Irsay and the Colts proposed a rule that would allow teams to open the roofs to their domes at halftime.
And I saw you tweet about this, bellyaching about how it's unfair to change the rules at halftime, but then I thought about it actually is unfair to change the rules because if you're getting crushed with the roof closed and it's like a snowstorm outside, yep. instead of open the roof and slow down the opposing team's offense, that's sort of garbage.
Or if like it's pouring down rain or really windy and you're up 25-0 you're like, all right, hey, open the roof. We're gonna dump on these guys and good luck scoring 25 points,
No, that takes home field advantage to like a level I'm not comfortable with.
Yeah, and what's the upside? Do fans get like, oh, hey, it's warmer now. This will get the fans some sunshine. Not to mention, if you're a fan and what if you went to a game and you wore a t-shirt thinking it would be warm inside and then you get there and they open up the dome and it's snowing.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's a problem. Just open and close the whole game. Can you do that? How about that?
Exactly. Just pick one, Jimbo. Roster expansion for the Thursday night games was tabled. Basically, they were going to go to like 46 to 40, add three more players for Thursday night games.
I like that idea.
I do too. Rule proposals that were voted down, Bill Belichick wanted to move the extra point to the 25-yard line. Instead, for the first 2 weeks of the preseason, you will see extra points kicked from the 20-yard line. So it's basically a 37, 38-yard field goal.
Yeah, all right. 2 weeks, fine. Whatever. Hopefully all those games go to overtime.
I'm kind of with Belichick. The extra point is boring.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the things I'm fine with mixing up. I know that kickers aren't crazy about the idea of their jobs going away, not for extra points, but for field goals or whatever. But no, for extra points, because then teams would just start going for two. But the extra point really doesn't – I mean, it's the least exciting play in football without question.
But, I mean, a 37 or 38-yard field goal, I mean, you're probably kicking that, right? Or are you going for two?
Well, you kick it early in the year, and then when it gets cold, I don't know, maybe you, yeah. You know, it's windy if Ursae opens the dome.
That's right. That's he opens the dome, makes you go for yeah. two. I don't know. I think if you're a good kicker, you're going to have – I mean, anybody – Ndamukong Suh and Wes Welker have kicked extra points. It's not like
– Well, here's the thing. Here's the math on this. So you make a 37-yard field goal 78% of the time,
mm-hmm.
and that's for 1 point. And then you convert a two-pointer
50% of the time.
50% of the time is for 2 points. So you do the – there's a little math you can do there. And whatever is worth more in terms of average value, that's what you do.
Don't you know the math? I don't know the math.
Let's see, 78% of 1 pointer. Oh yeah, that's 0.78. So you go for two. You go for two every time.
No, I was taking a sip while you were doing the math. Yeah, I guess you do go. Yeah, because you're getting 1 point
over the 0.78 points. So you know, on average, you go for two every time. So you got to be making about 100% of those extra points in order to keep your job.
Yeah, that's true. That's a tough gig. Redskins wanted to move the kickoff line to the 40-yard. Didn't get much.
I suppose those for safety reasons, but I mean, if you're going to move to the 40, just move it to the other team's 30, because at that point they're all going to be touchbacks from your own 40.
Right. Just give them the ball. It's everybody starts at the ball at the 20. I'd be fine. Yeah. You know what? I'd be fine if you did just you come out of the gates and the ball is under 20.
You know who would be really pissed about that?
Devin.
The Falcons. I yeah. just signed Devin.
That's Hunter. Right. That's right. I would guess that Rich McKay being on the competition committee didn't help that.
Yeah, he goes, check back in 3 years.
He's like, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Dan. What'd you request there?
Stand up, little man.
Redskins wanted to get rid of the cut down to 75 players during training camp. Did not. They got shot down. And then Rich McKay said somebody wanted to have an unlimited number of players allowed to be placed on injured reserve and then brought back, and that didn't come close to getting passed. This is dumb. You're just hiding injured players.
But is that it? Anything else?
That's it, I think, unless I screwed up something and you didn't tell me it on my back read.
Oh, no, I told you. I'm now looking through these Richie Incognito tweets. I don't know if you saw them while you were in Orlando, but he tweeted at Jonathan Martin, asked for him to call him, said things were all, you know, all water under the bridge in terms of their issues the last few months. Is that a good idea?
For them to talk on the phone? Absolutely not. You know what they could do?
Let me give you this tweet real quick, and then you can respond to this, too. He sent out a tweet today that says, Incognito did, everybody else... He left a phone number on Twitter for people to call him. Oh, my God. I don't know what this is about. So, clearly, the man's crazy.
Right.
What are your thoughts about him and Jonathan Martin reconciling and then Incognito's future in the NFL?
Well, first of all, I think that if Richie were smart, he would fire up a website and put this phone number there. So, that way, he could just keep tweeting links. And he could put, like, an ad on there and make some money.
Make some spare change to fix that Ferrari.
Yeah, that's right. He could fix his Ferrari. And he could do that by signing up for Squarespace.
Boom.
Exactly. And it would be $8 a month. He has unlimited help creating his own professional website or online portfolio, if you will. Or it could just be, like, it could be a picture of J-Mart. You know, him, like, hugging J-Mart. And then a number. And just say, call me. And then people could call, and like they have the 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week help at Squarespace, $8.
What offer code would he use for that?
FUN, fun. And then he and J-Mark could end up having fun together.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very familiar with using the FU on his little text messages, too.
So. That's right. You may recall F.
Just adding in.
Yeah. So unique mobile experience, too. So you could see that on his phone. Or, you know, when he's texting, he could text J-Mark the link. But yeah, today's podcast brought to you by Squarespace, which Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito should sign up for. Yeah, I don't think anybody. I can't imagine Dennis Allen. I sat down with Dennis Allen and asked him about Incognito. And
why does he know him?
No, Mark Davis has asked about him, and Mark Davis, not knowing anything.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Not knowing anything that's going on, said that he wouldn't close the door on it. You know, he should have just been like, no, that's not happening. So we asked Dennis Allen. He said, look, there are two coaches on my staff. People are connecting the dots that they probably shouldn't be connecting. I can't say no, but, I mean, you know, we don't. And he was basically just annoyed that I had to ask.
Yeah. I'd be annoyed if you asked me a question.
I don't blame him. So
how do you feel about Knowshon Moreno signing a one-year deal reportedly worth $3 million to join the Dolphins?
I like that deal for the Dolphins.
And for $3 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, they got plenty of cap space, don't they?
2 years in a row, they've been very busy in the offseason. I suspect they will still suck next year.
So, I was going to say, but on Incognito, I think that maybe next year Incognito could land a job. He might be too old at that point. Martin's not going to end up doing anything. Moreno, though, is a pass catching back. He's a good run blocker. He can grind out yards. He got an improved offensive line in Miami.
He had his best year with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, true. But it helps. But they can't. Lamar Miller is not just going to do it by himself. Daniel Thomas is not very. It's not great. Charles Clay is a fullback tight end type. They just needed a normal running back. $3 million is a lot of money. I understand. But they needed a running back who could pass block. They need blocking. They need blocking.
Are they going to win more than 7 games this year?
I don't think so. And so I was talking to some Dolphins guys, and you know Armando
Salguero
with the Miami Herald. He has been subtweeting our buddy Jason Lockefora about this Mike Wallace stuff. But I was actually,
what does subtweeting mean? Tweeting back at you,
but without tweeting at you. You're kind of like Lockefora tweeted that the Mike Wallace rumors are very much alive. And
oh, I see. He calls out Lockenfora, but doesn't use at Jason Lockenfora.
Correct. He says no one has. Well, I mean, just not because I have any sources or anything, but I just happen to be satelliting around those guys. I can confirm that it's pretty. I think it's legit. I don't think Mike Wallace will end up getting traded.
So Salguero says his sources say no.
He says the Dolphins told him that they haven't. And I was talking with another Miami Dolphins beat writer who will remain anonymous.
Obviously.
Hey, look, if you guess correctly, I won't say anything.
I wasn't there, but I have an idea.
And
you wearing a Target shirt?
Look, I'm not, like, I can't confirm or deny, but, and he was like, these are just false. There's just no way. And I told him, I said, look, man, I get that you know, you have your sources in the Dolphins. You're talking to guys high up there or low up there or wherever they are. And I understand that they told you nothing's happening. And I agree with you. Mike Wallace is really hard to trade for. Has a huge, his cap hit is massive. It accelerates tremendously. Jeff Ireland built a stupid contract, so he's getting like $25 million this year. So I understand that it's probably not going to happen. But just because the Dolphins are telling you guys that they're not doing that, doesn't mean you should believe the Dolphins.
Jed York told Ian Rappaport that, the coach, Jim Harbaugh, didn't talk to the Browns.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, like, of course these teams are denying it. Of course the Dolphins are saying, we're not trying to trade Mike Wallace. We're not talking to anybody. I mean, they're floated out there, but nobody's going to pick up the call. Nobody's going to answer that.
Yeah, that's right. And that's fine. I mean, I like you said, I could see both sides of this. Trading Wallace would be a bear, but I think it does say something that there's even a conversation that, well, he played like crap last year. You and I both aren't surprised by that, and they signed him to, a six-year, $60 million deal, or a five-year, $60 million deal.
It's a terrible contract.
You know, you do the math.
Yeah, bad contract. So, I mean, I just don't buy anything. I don't know. I don't believe that the Dolphins are going to suddenly be a good team.
Yeah, no, they're not. I mean, in fact, they crapped their pants down the stretch last year. They were 7-7. No, they lost their last two games.
They finished 7-9, right?
Yeah, they could have. No, they were 7-7 after they beat the Steelers and beat the Patriots, and then they lost.
Scored six points in two games against the Bills and Jets.
Right.
Terrible. Yeah, I mean, you just can't do that. Now, I do think that at least they went out and, you know, they added Brandon Albert. That was good.
They had a lot of guys. They franchised Brent Grimes. Cortland Finnegan's another.
They paid
$5 million, I think, for a couple of years.
No, they paid Brent Grimes. They gave him $32 million for 4 years.
Oh, they gave him a new deal? Okay.
Yeah. It was like the first, right before free agency. But yeah, they spent a ton of money. They had a bunch of cap space. I actually thought they did a better job this offseason than they did the last offseason.
The last offseason didn't seem bad on paper, but again, when you sign, it doesn't matter. It seems in general, when teams sign players good or bad in the offseason, it doesn't necessarily take the first year.
Right.
And the answer isn't to keep adding them, but whatever. It's not our problem.
Yeah, I mean, they need to hit on draft picks. It's not, I mean, they were, Jeff Ireland was desperate last year, tried to go all in. Didn't have enough linemen. His linemen had a scandal, and I mean, he nearly, you know, they nearly made the playoffs and it saved his butt, but they didn't, and it's probably the best thing for the Dolphins.
Mark Sanchez. I mentioned just a second ago, and then we'll get out of here, that Richie Incognito put some stupid phone number on Twitter. Our colleague John Breach, who is probably the most scatterbrained person you'll ever meet, apparently doesn't have a phone today. Look, he doesn't have a phone. He's going to call the Richie Incognito number, but either he doesn't know how to use the phone, he lost the phone, he got disconnected because he didn't pay his bill, but he just commented that he doesn't have a phone. So don't be like that guy.
Worth noting. All right, let's Don't be like John Breach. He didn't. You know, if he had a phone, he could view his mobile site on Squarespace. we are going to go through our news and notes segment here, brought to you by Squarespace.com. Mark Sanchez, basically a done deal to the Eagles. Your thoughts?
I think it's funny that when Chip Kelly got the job last year, we were talking about mobile quarterbacks, how Michael Vick would probably flourish in the system. And Vick did flourish until he got hurt. But now here's the quarterback situation in Philadelphia. Nick Foles, who had a great season last season. People still kind of question whether he's legit or not. I like him. Matt Barkley, who was dreadful last season as a rookie and part-time play, understandable. And Mark Sanchez, who hasn't been good since 2010. None of those guys, I don't know who wins that foot race. I guess Nick Foles, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, sure. It's like collecting old USC quarterbacks. I mean, I think he might just have human sacrifice just to, like, mess with Chip Kelly. Or, I mean, just to mess with Pete Carroll.
Oh, let me ask you, though. Would you trade, and this is basically what it is, would you trade Michael Vick for Mark Sanchez?
If I was getting Michael Vick?
Right. I mean, they're not. They're getting Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
I think Vick signed a one-year, $4 million deal, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I would rather have Michael Vick. I think that for the Eagles, though, I understand why they wouldn't. Like, Vick wasn't going to come back because he wasn't going to start. Nick Foles is going to have to get hurt. You know, I mean, for the Eagles, I almost think it was better for Chip to move on, at least in the sense of, because Vick wasn't going to play for them for a one-year, $4 million deal.
Less distraction.
Yeah, less distraction. Nobody thinks Mark Sanchez is stealing that job.
So, speaking of distractions, where does DeSean Jackson end up?
I am fascinated by this. To me, I get why the Eagles might want to go in a different – might want – you know, DeSean might be a pain. Chip Kelly might not like him. It's because he's always asking for money. He's always being a pain in the ass. I mean, he just has been his entire career. And he's – whatever. I mean, it's fine. You know, he can put up some good stats. As for why – maybe he's a pain in the ass in the locker room. Football-wise, though, I cannot fathom why the Eagles would consider doing this. If you lose DeSean Jackson and you set him free, you're taking the cap hit now. Now, they might want to spend more money. They want the $10 million that cutting him would give them in 2015. They also would love to trade him to get his salary off the books. But all of a sudden, you have a situation where your top two wide receivers are Riley Cooper and Jeremy Maclin. And Jeremy Maclin is coming off an ACL injury. He's doing a prove-it deal. That's fine. But what if he gets hurts again, and all of a sudden Riley Cooper is your number one, and you need him to beat cornerbacks to have success?
Yikes.
Yeah, you have to have DeSean. He's a speed factor.
They have LeSean.
I love LeSean. He's great. But you need that wide receiver. You need DeSean Jackson. Now, locking forward.
But again, we've talked about this. This is the deepest wide receiver draft in 400 years. So maybe they're banking on
– True.
Find him.
Would you rather have Mike Wallace or DeSean Jackson?
Huh?
Mike Wallace or DeSean Jackson?
Oh, God, DeSean Jackson, without question.
Oh, really? Okay. All right, there you go. Johnny Manziel performed well. Josh Gordon said he is, quote, pretty sure the Browns are drafting another franchise quarterback. And I believe earlier in the day, Mike Patton said the Browns could actually draft two quarterbacks in 2014.
Yeah, it worked out so well for the Redskins drafting two quarterbacks.
That's right.
RG3 is legit, but... You know, it's funny, our buddy Andy Benoit, who's now with SI, the Monday Morning Quarterback, sorry, I don't want to get yelled at, made a good point when there were reports that there isn't much interest in, what's his name? What's the backup quarterback's name in Washington? Kirk Cousins. And Benoit said that's because he's not a very good quarterback. And
right.
That's sort of the point. So I don't know if you need two quarterbacks for the Browns. They have a ton of picks, but they need to get better at a lot of places. Just draft one guy. That way we're not talking about quarterback controversies in preseason. And then, guys that can help you immediately.
What do you think about Steve Smith? Ron Rivera says Steve Smith does not have top-end speed like he used to.
He's probably right. Steve Smith is, what, 35?
He is.
But let me tell you something. We talked about this before. Steve Smith is going to be awesome in Baltimore. It's going to be like Derek Mason, but 10 times better. So I expect big things out of him, which doesn't make me happy as a Steelers fan.
Now, on the other hand, he wasn't ever going to do a lot this year in Carolina, stats-wise. I mean, just wasn't because the Panthers don't throw it a lot.
Yeah, they'd rather have their quarterback get killed, and now he's on crutches for 4 months.
That's right, with no offensive line. I think that they'll be able to replicate. I think Cotre can replicate Steve Smith's production.
I like Cotre a lot. He's not Steve Smith, but I don't know if you heard Tomlin say this, but he's super low maintenance, which is exactly what you want, which is the opposite of Steve Smith.
Right.
And he's professional. He shows up and he performs. So you really can't ask for much more than that. How many games does this Carolina team? Are they going to win seven games?
Yeah, I think they'll be 8-18.
Okay. Well, at least you're sort of honest.
I mean, that's honest. That's what I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, from your homerific standpoint, 8-18.
I'm telling you, I'm not a homer, man. I think that's all we got. Isn't it pretty slow day? Oh, Jim, oh God, goodness gracious. Jim Irsay had $29,000 in cash on him when he was arrested and charged with possession. If he had been a young black man, he would have been charged with possession with intent to sell.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that he had all that money on him, and my first thought was, you know what? You see those suits he wears? I wouldn't be surprised if he carries like 30 grand around all the time, even when he's sober. He's sure. A weird dude.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen some of those tweets he said? I mean, we've talked.
That could be the drugs.
the suit choice. Because he wears a lot of stuff like Greg Doyle will wear. Like the, what are those shirts that Greg Doyle likes to wear?
Affliction t-shirts?
Yeah, he wears like those crazy Affliction. Who's the Hardy guy?
Greg Hardy.
No, the designer. Like, he has his Hardy t-shirts. What are those guys?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, this is like, you know, like you see it on whatever those. I'm really dating myself. But I saw some tweets of Irsay. Like, he took himself at 3 in the morning, dressed like he was going to a club when he was probably 25.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was all, weird. It's a whole weird situation. So the $30,000 didn't really shocked me that much.
He had $14,516 in a metal briefcase, $2,513 in his wallet, and $12,000 even in a laundry bag on the passenger side floorboard.
All right, it's weird. You know, the weirdest thing about all that is that he was driving a Toyota Highlander.
Yeah, what? I mean, this is just bizarre.
But he's a weird dude.
But he's a billionaire. He's an eccentric billionaire. It's a lot easier to justify personal usage for large amounts of cash when you're a billionaire.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his money clip is probably a little bigger than ours, and he might have 30 grand. He probably doesn't use a credit card as often as we do.
that's probably an accurate statement.
Especially to pay for drugs.
All right, that's it. Jim Irsay arrested. We'll have more next week. And we're back on the Iron Football Podcast. In the meantime, subscribe via iTunes. For Ryan Wilson, I am Will Britson. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.